Hello, everyone. I'm Anna.
I'm Nicole.
From The Flame. You can check out our information at theflameusa.com. Spreading truth like wildfire.
And we love uncensored news and information on Brighteon TV.
Or as well. All right, here we are. Welcome to the Robert Scott Bell Show, Hour 2. Those of you just joining us on Brighteon.tv, this is our time of the week where we get to hang out together. But we're on 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. Come on over to robertscottbell.com/listen for the live chat room as well. And you can sign up to become a part of our newsletter for free. You can text RSB, that's my initials, RSB to 22828. So the number 22828, send RSB and you will get plugged into our newsletter and all the great health, freedom, and healing liberty you can handle. Maybe a little bit more. This hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Appir Kohri, and he's an amazing doc who stepped it up and speaks out. We have his website linked. You've seen him interviewed on many shows by many people. He's got a book out called War on Ivermectin, the medicine that saved millions and could have ended the COVID pandemic. We'll talk to him about that as well. But first up, can you trust science? That's the question. I'm going to try and answer that after this brief break because the power to heal is yours.
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
Hello, folks. My name is Dr. Kohri Williams, 1776 Forever Free. We're a constitutional organization that's done activism for years. Now we're launching a new series of modules that are going to help candidates get elected and avoid those scumbag consultants and campaign managers. Remember, if you want uncensored truth, go to Brighteon TV and go to 1776foreverfree.com and donate now so we can change America. God bless you and Semper Fi.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
If you're just tuning in, you missed our first hour interview with John Stockton, Hall of Fame NBA point guard John Stockton from the Utah Jazz, and his willingness to speak up on these health freedom issues makes him even more of a legend. A great guy. I hope you'll tune in later on the areas that we're not banned, and there's a bunch of them. So if you come on over to robertscottbell.com/listen, you'll see many, many options for listening later, much less watching live, like our simulcast right now on Brighteon.tv. And welcome all of you that watched the documentary film that we premiered on Saturday, Utah Safe and Effective? Really well received, pretty profound in what it revealed. I interviewed a great number, more than we could actually even put in the film, of those who have been injured by the COVID jab, and looking for ways out, ways to help them. And that would include the medical lane, the chiropractic lane, the naturopathic lane, the homeopathic lane, the herbal lane, the nursing lane, all of these lanes that are now finding the need to come together as it always should have been, to cooperate. The spirit of why did you get into medicine? Why did you become a doctor, a healer, anybody? Is it to help people or is it to harm them? And I realize in the allopathic profession, many people go in for the right reasons, but end up trapped in a system that doesn't provide an avenue of free thought, critical thought, or free thinking, particularly as it came to COVID. And those physicians who dared to speak out about success with things like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, other things, they were pilloried. Like I, as a homeopath, was pilloried just for being a homeopath. But now even the doctors were. And this is an anti-freedom stance that the medical profession has, because it's been captured as our FDA and NIH and CDC and that larger WHO has captured by the pharmaceutical industrial complex. You're not surprised hearing that, but if you're new, you might be, wow, what was that? I didn't know. All of what I thought was true is not true, and it's a grand disillusionment. And the question is, can you move forward and step up into your power, or do you feel powerless because of what you realize, how much you've been deceived, how much I had been deceived in my young life, growing up chronically ill in a pharmaceutical medical family, and finding ways out through natural medicine? And how are these physicians doing? Waking up and realizing there are limits as well in their training, coming back to 1910 in the Flexner Report, where it all became about drug deficiency diseases, outside of advances in surgery, of course, and things like that. Now, there's a question here at the Brownstone Institute, a long article by Alex Washburn, and it basically headline says it right out: science is not to be trusted. But what does that mean? For those of us who are kind of nerds, science nerds and geeks, right? We love science. What do you mean it's not to be trusted? Well, recognize that science is not a religion, or it's not supposed to be, where you just believe the dogma and you have faith in whatever they say. Science is a process of uncovering hidden truths and facts, and you actually pile the facts together to make some assessments of life and how it works, the nature of life itself in many ways, and a lot of things. And so it's an exciting endeavor. Unfortunately, people like Fauci, who claim to be science, are destroying science. Or at least anybody that thinks there's legitimacy in science as it's been captured by the medical pharmaceutical complex. And what we argue for in the documentary film ultimately is something I've been saying since I first heard Ron Paul say, end the Fed. You remember those days? Boy, oh boy, is that prescient now, especially with the bailouts of the banks that are failing. I bought the website End the Med. I've never used it. Because I wanted to end the medical monopoly, and that is a separation of medicine and state that I think would have to happen for a renaissance to occur in all fields and endeavors of healing, including modern medicine and all of its trappings. The innovations that occur, they occur in freedom, not in coercion, not in deception, not in economic conflicts of interest. They happen in the freedom to engage in asking questions that are not allowed to be asked. Because those things that are not allowed to be asked are the very things that need to be asked. So there shouldn't be a third rail of medical politics. Oh, don't question vaccines. What about all the people that have been injured? Oh, ignore them. It's just a coincidence. There are a bunch of Yahoo quacks. What about the doctors that acknowledge that? Well, they're off the reservation, so they're now quacks too. And they just denigrate them. They're anti-vaxxers. And the term anti-vaxxer is a pejorative term that doesn't engage your critical thinking. It just says you don't want to be called that name either, so you better shut up. But then they expanded the definition of the word anti-vaxxer to make it meaningless, to where you could be for every vaccine, even the COVID one, and you're not for the mandate. You're an anti-vaxxer. They've destroyed the ability to use the word of denigration to any effect at all. If anybody's concerned by being called that, I don't know anymore. But regardless, we're pro-freedom. And that's where we can find alignment, even in disagreement. And so this article is long about the science not to be trusted. It isn't about science per se. It's about the people engaged in it that are restricted or directed through conflicts of interest, typically economic or other, or for other nefarious reasons, to where what you can ask, what you can study is very limited. I remember back in the 1990s, my mentor in homeopathy was brought into the, it was the NCCAM, National, it was basically the Office of Alternative Medicine that started at NIH, because there was such a groundswell of people were using it. There were some congressmen, senators that were loud about it, say, okay, we'll do this. We'll throw you a bone. We'll get you that center. And then they even brought homeopaths into this to kind of analyze studies that could be done. But it very quickly was corrupted and altered to the point where it was meaningless. It was made completely powerless to find actual answers. One of my dearest friends in this lifetime was no longer with us, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. I befriended him many years ago at a medical conference in New York City, and I warned him. I said, your study that they're doing on your treatment for pancreatic cancer through diet, through enzymes, you were succeeding. He was succeeding in healing everybody that came to him. People, there are some people still alive today in 2023 that were under his care with pancreatic cancer over 20, 25 years ago or more. And they corrupted, they condemned his study to fail because the people, and this ties into the NIAID and NIH and Anthony Fauci, thanks to a lot of the good works of my friend Celia Farber, we found out that the people that were on the failed nevirapine trials in Uganda and Africa for so-called HIV transmission from mother to baby, that ended up killing mothers and babies. It was such a scandal. It was such a criminal act. Rather than engaging in criminal charges against those researchers, they took those people and transferred them onto, many of them, onto Nicholas Gonzalez's study in New York City at the designated testing sites. They condemned that it would fail. They didn't want competition for chemo, radiation, and surgery. Certainly not that nutrition and enzymes could cure any cancer. So this is the conflict we're dealing with. It isn't science per se. It's who's in charge of it, who controls it, who runs it, who's funding it, and for what purpose. We need a renaissance. And I think we're going to get that if doctors like Pierre Corey have their way. He's not sitting down, lying down, taking it silently. He's speaking up, speaking out against these buffoons, these morons, or these minions, of the, whether they be a Fauci's or of those that have interests that are not actually finding out the facts, revealing them, and allowing freedom to reign again in all forms of medicine. Welcoming to the Robert Scott Bell Show, Dr. Pierre Corey. Welcome, Dr.
Hey,
Corey.
Robert, great to be here. Nice to see you.
How are you, my brother? It's good to see you too, man. You are a firebrand, and we need you out there just laying it out as it is. And, you know, we were talking briefly with John Stockton and you and I, and you had brought up, you know, John had watched you in your latest testimony in Wisconsin. It's like you were fired up because you had to sit there and watch these morons spout off absolute misinformation, disinformation. It wasn't coming from you or me. It was coming from them.
Yeah. You know, yeah, you talked, you know, I totally can use the word moron. You used actually a couple of them, but, you know, before the testimony this time, I mean, I listened to an hour of the top health agency officials in the state of Wisconsin testify in support of a mandate on meningococcal vaccine and chickenpox vaccine. And the data that they would cite and their arguments were just so devoid of logic. And, you know, going back to, you know, when you talk about capture, to me, the foundation of all the corruption of science is actually the capture of what I call the high impact medical journals. Mm-hmm. That's very curated science. I mean, it's just, you know, editors of those journals have talked about it for 20 years. There's editors who resigned because they could not stay in their position anymore and remain with integrity or ethics. And especially in COVID, you see so much papers with predetermined results, and they completely censor any science or data which shows, you know, that's contrary to what supposed consensus is. And that corruption there, you know, when I listened to these agency officials, I was left with the question, right? So are they stupid? Like, are they a moron?
Right.
Do they really believe, or are they a sociopath where they're literally going up there and telling lies that's going to hurt, you know, hundreds of thousands of people?
Yeah.
Or are they just drinking the Kool-Aid and they're victims of this corruption in science? Yeah. And the most magnanimous is that it's the third. I really do believe those officials believe what they say. But at the same time, you could see that they misrepresented the data. They certainly do not want to present all the data. Mm-hmm. They completely ignore adverse data. And so anyway, I'll just finish, Rob, by saying, like, by the time I went to testify, I was really frustrated is not even the word. I was really angry because I couldn't believe they were given a microphone and be allowed to peddle these distortions of what really the science shows to support these vaccines, which is nothing, nothing.
Yeah, the very thing that they're utilizing against us, the claims of misinformation and disinformation, they are completely engaged in a monopolistic spouting of it while trying to shut down you and your colleagues and me and my friends that have been speaking out about this for years. I imagine that when you went to medical school, you had no inkling of an idea that there was this level of corruption at the scientific journal level.
Robert, my awakening started in COVID. I mean, I had been exposed to, and I had encountered a couple of corruptions in my career as an ICU doctor. Mm-hmm. We definitely had a couple of fraudulent papers and medicines, which actually led to massive effects across the country. I mean, one is a drug called Zygris. It was a $5,000 dose drug. It was an infusion in the ICU. And that was a complete corrupt exercise. And that was when I first got done with training. So I knew there was some corruption. I knew Big Pharma was not your friend. But I didn't know that really the whole system, I didn't know the depth and the scope and the scale of it. I really couldn't imagine that. So you said, you know, you've been fighting this for years. I mean, you've been aware of this for years. And you're right. You can go back to 1910. When suddenly the science is being corrupted and they're censoring all sorts of approaches and knowledge of mechanisms and healing, and you're left with this really curated, very narrow, you know, a pill for every problem. And I've just learned so much in the last few years. So not only did I learn about corruption, but what's interesting is, like, I'm the product of the system, right? I was trained in medical school, the allopathic system. By the way, they don't have classes in medical school about pharmaceutical company corruption. Mm-hmm. They don't tell you about the history of how those journals have been influenced. They don't teach you classes on federal regulatory capture. I mean, these are all things that you have to come around. You have to start questioning the system to be led to these topics. And I don't know that I questioned the system. I questioned certain things about it. I didn't question the entire system.
Yeah, and this is quite a humbling experience, I imagine, because I look at you and I've heard you speak. I mean, you're at the top of your game, man. You are invested in real sound science and going down to the little nooks and crannies, all of it. You don't want to leave anything unturned before you present on it. So it's not a question of your intelligence at all. It's a question of programming, that we're all subject to being programmed by those who train us. You know, yep. For me, it was a disillusion. My uncle, who was a physician, said, "Don't become a doctor." I'm like, "Uncle Bob, what are you talking? That's all I want to do." Now, he was prescient in what he said. He planted a seed in me to say, you know what, I don't, because if I did to others what doctors did to me for the first 19 years of my life, I would be miserable. And he saw my spirit. So I went a different way, a way I had never even heard of until 5 years later, found out that my alma mater, Emory, taught homeopathy on its medical school curriculum up until 1949. And I had never heard the word until I went to a Civil War museum in the South. After I learned the word, I'm like, oh my God, the medical field kits in the Civil War were homeopathic. How do they erase an entire system of medicine?
Yep.
Who controls, you know, the history by erasing and rewriting it controls the present and the future. It's astonishing.
It is astonishing. I mean, you know, what led me to sort of start to deeply question the system is that I think it's fair to describe myself as one of the world experts on the evidence for and the clinical use of ivermectin in COVID. And, you know, and that's along with my colleagues. And that's the other thing, Robert, is that if you look at the five of us that started the FLCCC, I mean, Paul is literally the most published practicing intensivist in the history of our specialty. You know, I was well known for a lot of various contributions to the specialty. Joe Verone is like, he's got 1,500 peer-reviewed articles. I mean, we thought we had career-long contributions as thought leaders. We had credibility. And then we started to deeply study ivermectin, and we were just shocked. We knew that this could literally alter, if not solve, the entire arc of the pandemic. And so there we are. You know, I give the testimony, and I don't know that I expected a ticker tape parade, but I thought it would be at least warmly and gratefully received. And what happened next it showed me that I lived in a world that I didn't think I lived in. Like the world as I understood it prior to that testimony, I was already starting to, I was scratching my head a lot around the hydroxychloroquine. I thought that was, I wasn't deeply studied on hydroxychloroquine during the first 6 months. But when I saw what happened next, which was just, I saw unending lies. I thought science reporters actually, credibly listened to both sides. I saw no science reporting. It was just attack after attack after attack, not only on ivermectin or the idea that it could work, but on myself. And they did this before the fraudulent trials were published in the high impact journals. And I want to be clear on that. The attacks came immediately before they had any science to counter what I was saying. And so, that's when I knew something was up. Here, let me finish by saying this is kind of something I say in interviews because it's really important. Mm-hmm. The first 3 months after my testimony, an unprecedented event occurred in our cumulative careers as we published a review paper. It went through three rounds of peer review at a top journal or at a high level journal, and it was accepted for publication, and they wouldn't publish it. Week after week after week went by. Mm-hmm. And finally, Robert, I got a little bit of a temper. Mm-hmm. I'd had it. People were dying. It was the winter 2020-21. People were dying like crazy. And I wrote to the journal and I told them that I suspected scientific misconduct was occurring due to their delays and that I was going to go public. And within days, the chief editor of all the journals, it was a collection of journals, reached out to my editor of my paper, which was Robert Malone. Mm-hmm. He actually was the editor of that special issue. And this chief editor explained to Robert that they'd called in an anonymous third-party reviewer who had determined, contrary to all the peer reviewers that I went through, which were top scientists actually at NIH, CDC, these were old colleagues of Robert. Mm-hmm. This guy said that anonymous reviewer felt that our conclusions were unsupported by our data and that they were retracting. So like that was the first time where I was like, whoa, the fix is in. But what really changed my life was in mid-March of 2021, I received an email from a professor, long-standing, one of the world experts on vitamin D. He's got over 300 publications on vitamin D. And he wrote a two-line email. He said, "Dear Dr. Corey, what they're doing to ivermectin, they've been doing to vitamin D for decades." And then he included a link, and it was a link to something called the Disinformation Playbook. Mm. And basically, it's an article about what industry, the tactics that industry deploys when science emerges that's inconvenient to their interests. And no more inconvenient science has ever emerged since the evidence of the efficacy of ivermectin in COVID. And so, basically, then I suddenly, it was like a click, Robert. I suddenly saw the world very differently because when you read that article, it's very simple. It's a short read. You can still Google it. If you Google it, it's still a top hit. But when they started to describe the different tactics, and it's named after football plays, like the fake, the fix, the blitz, the screen, the diversion. And I read each tactic and I was like, I saw that yesterday. They've been doing that for 3 weeks. I had numerous examples of each of those plays. And it was suddenly like, it was almost like getting the teacher's edition to the world. I was like, me and Paul, we're in a war. We're fighting a war of disinformation. And we're also fighting in a decades-long war against repurposed generic drugs, right? Things that are not patentable or profitable. And they've been going after those in numerous disease models for years. Not only are they all pharma products, but as soon as they lose patent, they also become an enemy. Yeah. So they don't not only attack alternative medicines, they attack their own medicines as soon as they leave patent.
Anything that competes with the profitability of the patent, petrochemicals are still under patent, of course, becomes the enemy, as you point out. Now, in your journey to an awakening in the recent years, how would you weigh out the friends you've lost versus the friends you've gained in this time? What would you say about your life in that regard?
I love that the way you asked that question because, yes, both have happened. I haven't had like breakups with friends that had animosity in them. It's just that slow disappearance. Your phone, no more texts, no more check-ins. When I left medicine, I had 15 years of teaching under my belt. I was a program director. I ran a teaching program. I trained doctors in my specialty, medical students, residents. And, Yeah, I wouldn't hear them from them all the time, but they always would check in or ask me questions every once in a while. And I always loved hearing from my students. And then, you know, once I guess I became a little bit of a public figure with opinions contrary to the consensus, especially around vaccines, mm-hmm. phone went quiet. But you asked the other thing, which is the friends and the colleagues and the experts I've gained. I mean, the people who've known this stuff, I mean, people so deeply studied on numerous aspects of the world and medicine, like, it's basically been like a re-education. Like I've just learned a whole new thing. The other thing is too, is Robert, you probably know this, but I'm in private practice now. I focus solely on treatment of long COVID and vaccine injury. And I am learning so many different therapies from other disciplines that had you asked me about them 3 years ago, I would be like, ah, that's crystal healing quack shit.
Like
even something like hyperbaric, it was just mm-hmm. ignorance. We're not taught about those approaches. We're not taught about the mechanisms or of the evidence bases surrounding lots of different stuff that is not used in the system. And I love it because my practice of medicine now is so much broader. You know, like I can learn about anything, you know, nutraceuticals, you know, different mm-hmm. compounds that they don't teach you in medical school or in training. And so like, I find like there's this whole world I inhabit where like I can help patients yeah. using like safe, time-tested things, good mechanisms, and with really good results that I never would have used in the past.
And still more to learn. This is the exciting
part. Oh my gosh.
What I sense from you and what I sense that I, thankfully, my Uncle Bob was right. Don't do what you know you did, but you also had done some great things. I'm not saying there's no benefit to it, but in many cases, the medical school curriculum has become a prison of the mind.
Yes.
And even though you're learning extraordinary things, there's a limitation to that. And that's what I want to talk to you about more when we come back from this break. Briefly, our friends at Brighteon.tv, take a pause. You guys are listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show or watching it. Dr. Pierre Corey is my guest this hour. Come on over to robertscottbell.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we'll be back with more powerful healing after this.
Nearly all the vitamin C sold at retail today comes from China, and it's made from genetically modified corn. Even though vitamin C is a critical part of immune support, it's also critical to know where your vitamin C comes from. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, and we only sell non-China, non-GMO vitamin C. We then subject it to rigorous laboratory testing in our own food science lab, checking for heavy metals, glyphosate, as well as microbiological contamination. Only after it passes our tests do we encapsulate it and package it for our audience. You can find it at BrighteonStore.com. It's not the cheapest vitamin C on the market, but it is by far the most rigorously tested and honestly sourced vitamin C available anywhere in the world. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com.
Hey y'all, I'm Clayton Q. I'm from right here in the world famous Nashville, Tennessee. You guys can find me on all platforms. Just look up C-L-A-Y-T-O-N and the letter Q, Clayton Q, it's right here.
Also,
Furman Power Equipment, my tour sponsor. Go to FurmanPowerEquipment.com, use Clayton Q30 to save 30% off of Furman Power Equipment generator. We're gonna send Brody on TV one. I love Uncensored Truth right here on Brody on TV. Thank you, Ohio Brett, for having me on.
Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the Bivy Stick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the Bivy Stick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages, or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name, and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration, and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 Bivy Sticks that will be available in America this year. Get yours now while they're still available at SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com.
Hi, my name is Pete Santilli, and you're tuned into Brighteon.tv. I love Uncensored Truth, and I need Uncensored Truth on Brighteon.
Philosophy of health and healing and all that you're encountering now in that. I just need to let everybody know briefly some of the upcoming events. Maybe some of them you'll be at, for all I know. We were at the Next Steps conference together and been at a few over time. But if you go to the upcoming events tab at robertscottbell.com, that's where you can see many of the events. Some of them are online. Many of them are in-person events. And just briefly, the next travel trip I have is to Virginia. I've got a three-city tour with my friend Jonathan Emord, who is, you know, the health freedom attorney who's beaten the FDA back a world record 8 times. And we're going to be touring to, in support of his efforts to become the next U.S. senator from Virginia to defeat Tim Kaine, the Hillary Clinton Democrat mandate every shot stooge that he is. And this is Jonathan Emord. We've got three events coming up, 29th, 30th, and 31st in Virginia. And from there, you can check him out at Emord4VA. I hope that everybody supports him in his effort, because to have him, and he has the endorsement of Ron Paul, physician Dr. Ron Paul has endorsed my friend Jonathan Emord. He doesn't endorse just anybody. In fact, Jonathan Emord wrote legislation for Ron Paul when he was in the House, because he's a freedom guy like Ron Paul. So you definitely want to support him. After that, I'll be flying down to Clearwater. I think that's where it is. That's right. There it is. It's the Mind, Body, Soul Restoration. Our friends at Nutritional Frontiers, you do a great job with third-party validations on their supplements as well. And they have a three-day, two-and-a-half-day event, basically, on the beach, a nice healing retreat. And I'll be there. Judy Mikovits will be there. Tracy Straup and many others of my friends will be there. I'd love to see you at that event. That's coming up 1st and 2nd of April. Then I have the Be Healthy Utah event, I think the 20th and 21st. There it is. And that's a conference in Sandy, Utah, just outside of Salt Lake, basically. And then we have a big event with many of my friends joining us again in Nashville, Tennessee, with the Doctors Warner. There's Judy Mikovits again. A lot of wonderful people coming together for that the end of April. And then there's even more after that. You guys got to keep scrolling down and see. We've got a big family union for the Robert Scott Bell Show, like a farmstead, homestead kind of thing, food, camping, organic pie. That's why I'm going, and more, to see everybody. That's going to be a fun weekend in Missouri. And then I've got the Las Vegas Biomed Expo I'll be speaking at, moderating some panels, September 14th through 17th. And be on the lookout. We'll be adding more events as they come in. I'm sure, Dr. Corey, you'll be at some or all. I don't know. You got to stay home some too. Sometimes I just got to go, no, I can't do that one. That's one too many.
That travel that you just outlined for yourself, that's the other problem I'm having is just too much travel. I mean, it's a historic time. You know, I do want to get good information out. I feel responsible to do that, but it's hard to balance everything.
Yeah. We have links to drpierrecorey.com in the show notes today at robertscottbell.com, as well as to the FLCCC Alliance, as well as his book, War on Ivermectin, The Medicine That Saved Millions and Could Have Ended the COVID Pandemic, coming out in hardcover on April 4th. So I guess technically that's in pre-release at this point.
It's almost there, probably 6 weeks from publication.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to share again some of the philosophy I had being kind of a science nerd. I got to work on electron microscopes in high school. I mentioned I studied microbiology at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And then I ended up as a homeopath. They're like, oh, you wasted all of that to become a homeopath. No, it's why I'm alive and well in my mid to late 50s. Not going to say it yet. And running circles around my 20-something year old self and learning the things I learned outside of the official narrative saved my life and saved many people's lives. And many people are coming to that. And Dr. Corey is now aware of a lot more than the training had led him to. Now, I was reading peer-reviewed medical literature just because I was fascinated by what was being learned. And one of the things I did is I was traveling, you know, I'd often just, you know, connect through cities, sitting with people at lunch to say, I mean, what's your story? I remember this is one of the most indelible memories I have, sitting down next to a cardiologist. And he has stacks of medical papers and everything. He was getting ready to go to a medical conference. And I said, hey, have you read, and this was in the 90s. I said, have you read about the controversy about cholesterol? Apparently cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease. The entirety of, you know, giving statins, it makes no sense. He looked at me very sternly. He's like, are you a doctor? I said, I'm a homeopath. Oh, and then his face got in a bunch. I'm like, how do you know this? I read these articles. And yet it was a very uncomfortable thing for him to acknowledge that he didn't have a monopoly on it. And also then the conflict comes when, if you know that, which he clearly had read, yet still prescribed statins, which he clearly was doing, many in the field are still doing, that they realize that if they don't, they are out of you know, everything that they had in terms of the enjoyment of whatever money that came in for their lifestyle, whatever, to pay for their kids' college, whatever it was. But it was an economic imperative that, despite the science that showed obviously their statin drugging of the population was wrong and not helpful, they had to do it or else they would be out. Yeah. So that's been going on for decades.
Yeah, I mean, they baked that into the system, and there's quality standards, right? Where, you know, you're judged on quality. Did you put, you know, someone comes in with heart failure, you have to put them on a beta blocker, and I'm you know, statins are written into that too. You have someone high cholesterol, and you're basically not following, you know, the expert society guidelines. And so that, you know, and you know, the other thing that you touched on is, you know, although you give this example of a cardiologist who's well versed or reads a lot of literature, to be honest, the vast majority of doctors, especially working full-time clinicians, they're not reading.
So
they're really taking stuff from the top and the experts, which is the worst, because in order to really figure out the truth about any topic, you have to do it not only a deep dive, but you have to do a broad one, right? It can't just be one source. And, you know, when you start reading other people's approaches and what they've understood, like, especially around statins, I mean, if you look at even the published statin trials, if you remove any of them that had pharmaceutical conflicts of interest and you just look at the independent trials, the conclusions are far, far different. And so, again, you have to have a knowledge that not everything is the truth in those journals, and it's a very narrow representation of scientific truth. And so, yeah, it's so much I've learned.
Well, and also when you hear, I mentioned the word anecdotal, and it's not a bad word. It's actually a starting point in science. It's observation. And I remember when we had Dr. Stella Emanuel on, originally from Africa, fascinating woman that doesn't hold back. She wears her religious beliefs on her sleeve, and I think it drives her clearly, and I respect that too. But she's like, I'm having 100% success. I'm like, not many things you could say have 90%, you know. And I remember when they claimed 95% success for the COVID jab. That was part of the documentary. We show everybody repeating the same mantra when it was relative risk, if that. But, you know, here you have people that have success. I'm like, that alone should have been whoever was president going, let's talk to these doctors and say, what are they doing? And it was the opposite. It's like, we got to shut these doctors down at all costs. I'm like, what do you value? If that's the you know, the way you go about anybody that claims success, you don't even investigate.
Yep. No, and the you know, that's, you know, so I talk about the corruption of the journals, but you're talking more conceptually or even philosophically, right? This decades long turn to denigrating, you know, the powers of clinical observation, of devaluing it nearly 100%. So any doctor who says, hey, I've been using hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, the patients seem to get better very rapidly. That's just placebo effect. You can't really tell if it's working, which is absolutely absurd, because when you become an expert in any field of medicine, one thing that you get a real strong sense of is the average trajectory of illness, how long they stay ill, what kind of combination. And when suddenly you introduce an intervention and you see that trajectory altered, you don't need a randomized controlled trial. You don't need any trial. Like, you can tell when things are working, you know, not on one patient, but, but here's the thing. This is where the corruption gets bigger, is not only do they now dismiss the powers of observation of even experts who've been treating diseases for 30, 40 years. And when they say that they're finding efficacy with this approach, that doesn't count. Individual doctor doesn't count. But then you go further and they literally now, the way the rules of medical science research now is nothing but large, prospective, double-blind, multi-center, randomized controlled trials can change policy or reach any sort of recommendation. So no other science or data will ever get a medicine approved. And now, who can afford those? There's only two entities that can afford those large, multi-center trials. And that's, of course, Big Pharma, and then our friends at the National Institutes of Health, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the same thing. Yeah. And so now they have all doctors in the world trained on the highest impact journals where only the biggest trials are published. And those trials are, unfortunately, there's so many dozens of examples, they're completely manipulated for, you know, a preordained objective. They know that it's a predetermined result. So they want to push a medicine, they can design a trial to be positive. If they want to attack a medicine, they can design a trial to be negative. And with that, they steer the entire ship.
Yeah. And of course, the irony of the anecdotal reporting, it results in what? Off-label use of drugs. Oh, by the way, I know this wasn't approved for this, but we've tried it here and we seem to be having an impact that maybe we should repurpose this thing. And that used to be kind of normal and standard. In fact, some companies got in trouble because they started promoting it before it was approved that way. But the physicians had the autonomy to do that. Now suddenly they were attacked viciously for doing so. And if we go back even further to the layperson interaction on this discussion, we go to all the moms that approached their doctors that said, I don't know, my little Johnny, my little Susie was fine. And we got the first childhood or the second childhood shot and everything reversed. And they were gaslighted, to say the least, much less denigrated, because they weren't doctors. Yet who knows their children more than a mother that spends all the time, that observes, this is it, and then suddenly it's reversed. Just like you said, the course of a disease changed dramatically by one intervention, and you know it, you've seen it, and you're dismissed right outright. I mean, how do these moms feel?
I like how you brought that up, because I would say the best top clinicians in the world are the moms of their children. Yeah. You know, when you take a history from a mom of a sick child, even adult, you know, when you're talking to the mom, I mean, they just know everything. They know everything that happened, what happened, associations with different foods, exposure. Like, they know all the stuff that makes their kids sick. And so, but moms are not listened to. When those vaccines injures kids, you know, they bring out that pejorative, right? The anti-vaxxer. And suddenly, you know, you have physicians in many places in the country. They will not accept a child if the mother or father are against vaccination. They won't even accept them into their practice.
Yeah.
And so, but I like that point you said. Moms know. They know.
Yeah. Well, we've got to reassess our value system in terms of paying attention. And I think that's the cornerstone, as I said, of science. The moms observe, they report on their observations, and they're dismissed, much like the physicians, like yourself, report on top of the studies that you had done. But clinically, we're having some dramatic results here. We need to look at this. And of course, the agenda was the jab, the mRNA technology, bringing it out at all costs. So any kind of treatment had to be destroyed utterly, or else there would be no a basis for an emergency use authorization. We talked about that economic imperative. That corruption goes to the highest levels of media, highest levels of medicine and government. And there we have these institutions that people relied upon and the grand disillusionment that has occurred in the last 3 years. Now, for the better, ultimately, we must be able to see through this, even if it hurts us to do so. And I had that disillusionment growing up in medicine and trusting and believing in all the science and realizing they were going to kill me. Not because they wanted to at that time. It wasn't nefarious. It was just, this is what they were trained to do. I was not deficient in any drug or shot or surgery, but I had it all. And I was not getting better. So for me, that's what drove my life, as I observed that. And, you know, here we are, you know, the radical homeopath you're actually on the air with, and this will destroy your reputation from here going forward, Pierre.
I think that's hard to do at this point, Robert. You know, in some circles, I'm sure my reputation is irrecoverable, but you know, I think the people who've listened to me and understand my approach, and that, you know, I don't really opine on stuff that I'm not deeply studied on. And so I stand by my word. My conclusions are not superficial. And you know, I believe I'm speaking truth. I mean, as the best available evidence that I can amass to form my opinions, I do. And you know, I think I've found that a lot of people appreciate that. And you know, I'm not going to change.
Well, authenticity is something rare, although I'd like to think that it's growing in desirability as a trait, and people are finding their authenticity as well. And I think that's what draws people to you and others, you know, like Peter McCullough, who I've been on stage with as well. And, you know, I lecture on nutrition and homeopathy. And after the talks, he comes up to me and says, I didn't know anything about that. Right. And what, you know, he's at the top of his field in cardiology. Before, he might have denigrated me as like, why are you even on the stage with me? So there's been a lot of transformation. And I think coming back to an egalitarian playing field where we look, each of us has strengths, weaknesses. I don't pretend to know what he knows or you know, but I love being able to engage and discuss, and we learn from each other, and we're all better off for it. And then those that come to us for help are better off for it. And that, if that's not why we got into this, maybe find something else to do.
Yep. No, I'm learning so much. I you know, we have, you know, in fact, if you look at my nonprofit, right, the FLCCC, you know, We've been putting out, you know, we've been working on a protocol, and I think you guys have too, you know, on how to address vaccine injury in long haul. But that's really coming out of a really great collaboration with different providers from different disciplines, yeah. You know, different approaches to healing. And we're just learning a lot from each other. It's a really rich conversation. Paul and I we're just learning new things every day about disease and therapies, and it's great. Oh, Robert, I want to say one thing. When you talked about all of those upcoming conferences and stuff, I think you had one that was April 28th to 30th.
Yeah.
And I saw Jordan Vaughn was a speaker on one of those conferences. I think he's double booked because the FLCCC, we're having our second, now our second annual, it's going to be semi-annual medical conference on the approach, understanding and treating spike protein induced disease, you know, which is long COVID and vaccine injury. And, you know, we have a really good roster of people from different backgrounds where we're teaching, you know, we're trying to share our knowledge of how we're treating and diagnosing and treating these patients.
Go full screen on that, Super D. Let's see if that's
way at the bottom. I saw Jordan Vaughn. I'm going to yell at him.
Yeah. Well, maybe can he sneak out for like a day and come?
Well, we're in Texas. I don't think he can be in Texas and Nashville on the same weekend. Time.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good point. So definitely reach out to him and say, make sure you're at the place you need to be. But yeah, there's a good crowd of people that will go in both places. We can't all be everywhere at once.
Maybe he's going to like Skype in or something, maybe, right?
Oh, maybe he can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. They've done that before. They've had remotes in. So that's a possibility as well. But I'm glad that these events are going on. And, you know, we didn't stop, although we were reduced in scheduling over the, you know, the most two intense years of craziness in COVID. But I connected with many physicians that were not afraid. And we had events and we found ways around the restrictions. I remember what was the first year? It was an event, Memorial Day weekend, we had in North Carolina in Charlotte, and we were meeting at a hotel, and then the governor himself was trying to shut us down. It's like, you can't meet that. And they wanted us to have like six people in a large ballroom. And then we found a way that it was nothing about using the open atrium area of a hotel. So with that loophole, we were able to, and people were sitting on each other's laps in the middle of the fear of COVID. Nobody was afraid. It was the coolest thing. But, you know, those things were the super spreader events. Nobody got sick. Nobody died. On and on it went. We had to push back against such ridiculous fear, but understand that fear has been kind of embedded into our DNA over centuries, right? The fear of the germ. And I've said this is a big vulnerability we had going in, that if they were going to divide us and conquer us, it wouldn't necessarily be from an outside invader. It would be from our own fear of germs, that they could tell us we're being invaded by germs and the only way is to shut down and lock down. And of course it happened. The question is, have we matured into a better understanding, a broader understanding of the terrain as well, to stop the insanity of just running and hiding, as opposed to understanding the immune system itself has the ability to withstand a lot of these things? Although what is, I'll admit, unusual about COVID, that it seems to be an engineered product, not a naturally occurring phenomenon.
Yeah, no, well, no question. I think this, you know, it's interesting. If you look at the history of pandemics since, 1918 influenza, I mean, there's been a lot of them where they've tried to do the same trick with COVID, right? Which is like, you know, Zika, Ebola, you know, H1N1, SARS, MERS. I mean, you know, they've tried to frighten and you know, the fear mongering in order to achieve these. I don't even want to go into the darker stuff, really the approach was insane. And the approach of COVID departed from a century of studying how to control epidemics and pandemics. And lockdowns was never part of it, ever. You know, and they immediately just, and you know, public health officials worldwide had been saying that before COVID, that there's no role for lockdown. And then what did we do? We immediately locked down, right? I hope where we are now, Robert, is that when they try to do this again, I don't know what the general understanding is of the general public, but I hope we don't repeat. I think you're going to see a lot of the same corruption and fraud occur, because these are really ripe times for those who have other ulterior objectives. Yeah. But the lockdowns, I hope we've learned from. I mean, that was so damaging.
I'd like to think that we don't fall prey to that same thing, but we know things have been leaked. Things have been written. There's another one coming. You know, they're planting the seeds just as they planted the seeds for this. And the question is, will we withstand that fear mongering this time. And it's, you know, partly I think the efforts that you're undertaking and many of your colleagues and me and others to get us past that so that they can't trick us and deceive us. Now, other things that I pointed out back in the 90s, I was reading literature on Ebola. That was a fascinating, scary disease, right? And then I found literature that showed that when they basically supplemented or restored selenium into the soils, into the people, that it immediately went away. There was no drug or vaccine required. And even early on in COVID, there was a report out of China. I saw University of Hawaii republished it that showed in areas of high selenium content, there was little or no COVID manifestation anywhere near that. Where it was lowest, that's where it, you know, blasted the
wow.
And selenium is known to stop viral issues, viral replication. So that's not even controversial, but we're saying, oh, selenium's that's scary. That's dangerous. Don't take too much selenium. The very thing that could save us in many cases, they say, oh, that's the danger.
Well, look, that's the other thing, right? I think we've talked about a lot already, but, you know, this isn't about public health. It's not protecting the health of, you know, if it was, we would have had a national vitamin D repletion campaign. You know, we know that almost most of America is vitamin D deficient. We know how important it is in protecting against infections. Mm-hmm. Selenium, I didn't even know about that. That's an interesting perspective. But if you bring forth any solution that is going to interfere with their solution that they want to provide you, no one talks about it, right? But I do want to say one more thing on that is that, like, you know, I can give you so many examples of who I was before COVID, and I can really make fun of myself. So, like,
I wouldn't recognize you.
Yeah. So number one, I read the New York Times cover to cover every day, had my whole life, believed everything it said, period. Mm-hmm. You want to know what the truth is, you go to New York Times. Yeah, the paper record, you know, pinnacle, that's one thing I believe. Mm-hmm. I also believed that really outside of valacyclovir, ganciclovir, you know, there was no effective antivirals. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that you could, you know, viral infections, you just, you know, let them run their course and there's nothing specific to treat them. Right. Now I know of, actually there's 42 different effective interventions, mm-hmm. You know, to mitigate the severity and really to treat viruses. And so that is a whole world that's opened up to me. And so I'll tell you, the reason why I don't have fear of the next pandemic mm-hmm. is I know plenty of stuff that can, you know, take care of any virus they throw at us. So I'm not scared.
No, right? And that's a great perspective and point to bring up is that part of the fear is that we've been programmed to believe there isn't anything, much like the cancer industrial complex. There are no cures, but, you know, and if somebody comes up and says it, oh man, they are squashed. I joke that they, you know, if you claim you have a cure for cancer and you even have scientific backing for it, they will find you in 24 hours or less and shut you down, maybe even imprison you and take all your money away. But it took them 10 years to find Osama bin Laden, right? It's like, what does that tell you about the danger they perceive in terms of terrorism, right? Who's the real danger? People who can cure disease with no big pharma, you know, patented drugs, for instance, or monopoly techniques. You know, coming back to the selenium thing, that is another aspect of all viral diseases. You know, Dr. Bitar used to call selenium birth control for viruses. I think also we'll look back on viruses and say we got it all wrong. I mean, we're a lot of it is theoretical. Is it really causative or is it a result of dysregulation and on it goes outside of the engineering of this stuff? Also silver, you know, the silver ions play a huge role. Sure. We have so much science on that in terms of antimicrobial activity, but it stops viral replication as well. And we can take that at safe levels. So my kids have never been vaccinated. They're 23 and 17 and a half, and they've never once even had an antibiotic. And they've had infections, you know, it's like, but I found ways with natural medicine, homeopathy, other things to raise them and navigate without having to resort to it, even though I believe there's a place for modern medicine. I've never said there isn't, but if you can use it less, you're better off.
100%. And especially you brought up the cholesterol hoax. Mm. You start to learn there's a lot of hoaxes. I mean, vaccines are a hoax. They're a complete myth. And the robust health of the unvaccinated children, you know, now those are studies that have been done, and I've seen some of the results. They're never published in journals, but mm-hmm. it's not even close. It's not even close. We have generation of kids with, now we're up to 72 shots in the vaccine schedule. And that's one of the reasons why I was down. I was not only honored, but I felt responsible and committed mm-hmm. to go down to the state legislature last week and try to protect the kids of Wisconsin. I mean, I don't want to sound grandiose, but it's a reality to me that, like, I know kids are going to get injured. And Robert, that testimony, going back to it, do you know what they were doing? They were trying to mandate a meningococcal vaccine to enter school. Mm-hmm. Now, keep this in mind. Do you know how many cases of meningococcus we've had in Wisconsin in the last 5 years? On average, 6 to 10 cases, but wait for it. Guess how many of those cases were from a strain that vaccine targeted? One. One per year for 5 years. And they're proposing putting a needle into hundreds of thousands of kids. You know, probably it's going to be the fifth needle of that shot where they're going to get four others with it, never test the efficacy. And so, you know, I got really scared for the kids and parents of Wisconsin who they don't have, you know, like I was talking to a buddy of mine, you know, the average guy, if you work at Home Depot or something like that, you're trying to keep your family, they don't have the time to do the deep dive. They generally have to trust the authorities and the experts. And like I wouldn't consider myself an expert, but I had data showing absolutely how ludicrous it was. And I thought it was really important that I get that out there.
Trust the authoritarians at your own risk or the risk of your family and loved ones. By the way, shout out to my friend, Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, Dr. Jack and IPAC at EDU. They're doing a lot of great work in the sciences outside of the conflicts of interest. He's invited me to speak today on silver at 7 o'clock Eastern through his, I think it's a Zoom meeting, and I'm going to be going through the science of copper, I think, specifically. A lot of the deficiencies exacerbated COVID. In fact, with zinc and vitamin C dropping copper levels even further inadvertently, we saw a lot of things that were not considered, and I got to consider them. So I'm going to be talking about that with that group. And Dr. Pierre Corey, we're out of time, but good Lord, it was about time we get you on here, man. What a great time to have you.
Pleasure. It was great to see you. Great to talk to you. And I love listening to you, man. You're a wealth of knowledge, and you've been awake for a long time. I'm jealous that you raised your kids without vaccines, because I wish I had. So
the healthiest kids I see as I travel around the world are the least or not vaccinated at all. That's an observation, but you're right. Paul Thomas and others have put it out there. That's valid. So Dr. Pierre Corey, welcome here anytime, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks. All right. See you again.
Bonus round coming up. The power to heal is yours.